Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There are different kinds of killers. Some act in rage, some plan in silence, and then there are the ones who know just enough to play God. One calculated dose at a time. That's a version of James Craig prosecutors are showing to the jury. Not a man who snapped, a man who scheduled, who used his professional know-how not to heal but to harm, quietly, invisibly, and with clinical precision. In this section, we're talking about murder by milligram, not bullets, not knives, not anything you'd see on a police procedural. No, this was poison, cyanide ordered online, Visine bottles piled up by the dozen, and a woman, Angela, who went from dizzy spells to a coma to a slow, painful death, while her husband held her hand and sent pics to his side chick, allegedly. The timeline is damning if it holds. February 27th, he allegedly opens a fake email account, orders cyanide, searches for how to make poison from oleander, and is arsenic detectable. You know, normal searches. March 6th, Angela goes to the ER for the first time, then again on March 9th. By March 15th, she's brain dead. In between, a lot of questions. And one man who, according to prosecutors, was smiling the whole time. Now, here's a legal challenge. Poisoning is a method built on inference. You don't often catch it, anyone in the act. There's rarely a video, rarely a fingerprint on a murder weapon. What you get instead is chemistry, digital breadcrumbs, and a trail of behavior the prosecutors say adds up to intent. But how do you prove intent when the evidence is silent? When the only witnesses are text messages, Amazon orders, and the fact that a man trained in anatomy may have weaponized that knowledge to carry out the perfect or nearly perfect crime. Eric Faddis is with us again. He knows how these cases work from both sides of the aisle. What's the prosecution's best strategy to make poison feel as lethal as the jury box or in the jury box as it was in real life? And what defense can do? Can they begin to hold water against that kind of scientific narrative? That's where Craig's courtroom fate starts to crystallize, not in emotion, but in evidence. And let me know in the comments section what your thoughts are on Eric's thoughts and our conversation and this case in general. That's on YouTube. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Let's get into it. There are texts that they're supposedly going to be showed that show betrayal and heartbreak, not necessarily suicidal ideation going on. But one could say if you're heartbroken and betrayed, you would naturally have that as well. Possibly, maybe, if you want to believe that over there, juror number 5. But it's not always the case. And especially a way of dying like this. Is that the road you think that they're going to be going down? That this was a self-inflicted suicide by the cyanide that my husband happened to buy and get to his office and, you know, the extended release eye drops from Walgreens?
You know, Tony, I was talking about this with Carol McKinley. She's a reporter for the Denver Gazette and has done things nationally. And she brought up a really good point that if a person wants to commit suicide, usually you want it to be quick and as painless as you can do it. Mm-hmm. You don't want to draw it out over the course of weeks by sort of incrementally introducing poisons into your body such that you have to be hospitalized three different times until that final act is committed. And so I think that could be a hard sell for this jury.
In this setting, as well, I want to talk about that and as far as how that will play to the jury and the fine line, I would imagine that the prosecutor is having to walk in this case because, number one, you don't know where the jury is sitting on this guy. If you they are looking at him as, well, he's coming across as this affable family man. Maybe he's being wrongly prosecuted. And if you go at him too hard, that can fire back at you the wrong way. And then you also have the religious component of it as well. He was a Mormon. And for whatever reason, we can add this to our ungodly high list of Mormons committing crimes. I don't know why it's insanely higher than other groups of folks, but it is. You got that aspect, and it's being tried, you know, in an area where you have a fairly large community of that going on. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. All I'm saying is, you know, sometimes it makes it more difficult when you have members of your same religion on that jury because they, again, it's that acceptance thing, not wanting to believe that there's a world where someone else who was like this could actually be like that.
Totally, Tony. I think the prosecution has done a good job walking that line. I actually personally know the prosecutors very well. Ryan Brackley, who's the second in command at that office, is the lead prosecutor on the case. Mike Morrow is another prosecutor. I've done tons of trials with them. And the way that they've been approaching this is really in kind of a matter of fact and rather meticulous fashion. It's been pretty dispassionate. They're not, you know, going and saying, hey, he's a dirty, rotten SOB. They're kind of saying, hey, look, this is the evidence. These are the text messages and allowing the jury to sort of draw whatever conclusions they're going to draw about him. So I think they've been doing a good job of not kind of overstepping that boundary and possibly hurting their own credibility by going after James Craig too aggressively. They haven't been doing that. Whereas on the other hand, the defense has been somewhat aggressive. And I think it's kind of because they have to.
Prosecutors, of course, allege Craig slowly poisoned his wife, Angela, with cyanide and tetrahydrolazine. That's the stuff that's in the eye drops. Both chemicals ordered using aliases and shipped to his office. So it wasn't just as he went down to the Walgreens and said, here, honey, we're going to have a Coke and Visine tonight. It was the actual active chemical that's in there that does it. So if you do it at a higher dose, it's going to be more effective, depending how you're looking at the word effective. Again, using aliases and shipped to his office. The poisoning timeline aligns very closely with his online searches and Angela's medical symptoms. So when prosecutors are building a case around poisoning, what extra challenges or advantages do they face in a case like this with, you know, the weird shipments to the office that seem to be the same things that are in her system?
Well, you know, from the prosecution's perspective, thank heavens they got an autopsy because James Craig actually was talking with his daughter about not wanting an autopsy. And mm-hmm. Now we can, you know, infer why that might be. But the autopsy is so critical in this case because it really details the chemicals that were in her body and how they led to her demise. But still, there are some difficulties because, you know, these things happen behind closed doors. James Craig wasn't introduced poison to her, you know, in front of the other six kids or in front of coworkers or anything like that. The allegation is that he put it into her protein shakes and then on the final fateful day went into the hospital and introduced cyanide into a pill that he somehow got Angela to take. Now, again, there aren't witnesses to that. There's no video to that. And so the jury is going to have to kind of connect the dots and there are going to be some disconnects throughout that entire factual chain.
And let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, this data is showing a clear timeline, the purchases, the search history, the hospital visits. I mean, is that going to be enough to convince a jury? What sort of holes are you seeing that could be poked into this thing?
So James Craig, depending on who you ask, but it appears he did a reasonably okay job at trying to kind of hide this and cover his own you-know-what. Because with respect to the poison shipments, he allegedly told his daughter in a letter or verbally that Angela Craig actually wanted the poison but couldn't get it. And so he was the one who went out and got it for her. You know, there are some text messages from Angela Craig in which she appears very distraught based on the infidelity. And so I think defense is going to use that and say, hey, no one can show that James Craig actually introduced this poison into Angela's system. And on top of that, there is at least some evidence that Angela was having a tough time emotionally and mentally. And I think they're going to try to pull all those together to say, hey, jury, that's reasonable doubt as to whether she died by suicide.
I bought my wife the poison because I'm cheating on her. And then it wasn't me. It's like the Shaggy song, literally. Like, hanging on the bedroom floor. Bought my wife some cyanide last night. Then she drank it out the door. Now she's in the hospital with a coma for the last 5 days. That was the original. That was the album cut, the radio edit they had.
That was a heck of a remix there.
They had to tone it down for the radio. It was too much. That's quite an argument to make to a jury. I bought her the poison because she was depressed because I'm a horrible human being and I've been cheating on her left and right. And I just was going to give it to her in case she wanted it. Has that argument ever worked? I mean, maybe so. I don't know, but that's kind of nuts.
That's a novel one to me. And curiously, there is some kind of prior drugging episode that neither side really got into detail regarding, but there are text messages that reference some prior drugging. And it's, according to reports, could have been when James Craig was also suicidal years before. And there was some kind of drugging going on. Although, like I said, we just haven't heard details during the trial about that. So maybe they're going to be able to tie it together in their defense case in chief, which I think is going to be at least a week or so away.
I feel bad for these kids that are realizing just how messed up their parents were. And it's hard because one of them's dead, so we can't really get the full context of what was going on. But if they're both having these problems and they're both contemplating, again, allegedly ending it and getting drugs through the dental practice, this seems like there was a lot of unhealthy things in this relationship. But how do you defend? I mean, is the defense going to be, I got the drugs for her? I would think you go down a road of something of like, I don't know, I needed cyanide. I was trying some new dental damn stuff. something that was going to be applicable to your practice. Not that I'm buying poison for my wife should she like to use it someday.
Certainly that was an idea that was considered, but in court, Tony, James Craig's dental partner, Dr. Ryan Redfern, I think preempted that defense entirely because he got up on the stand and he said, hey, look, in my 20 plus years of being a dentist, arsenic has never been something that has a legitimate purpose in dentistry. Cyanide has never been a chemical with a legitimate dental purpose. And so certainly that could have been an argument raised, but I think James Craig's own dental partner sort of cut that off. I don't think they can argue that.
I don't know how or what dentists have access to ordering. I would imagine, you know, there's some restrictions on what you can and can't order, like, you know, can't just go order like uranium or something for fun. But I guess cyanide and also the chemical in the Visine that they ordered as well, or he ordered as well, allegedly. Why? Why does he even have access to that? Why is that something that he's able to get his hands on in the first place? Or can we?
This part was shocking to me.
If we wanted to order it, we're not dentists, obviously. Could you or I order that stuff online and get it delivered in a legal way, the way he seemingly did?
shockingly, Tony, after detective, one of the Aurora Police Department detectives' testimony last week, it appears the answer is yes.
Oh, God.
So what they did, the detectives looked into the digital footprint. They found an Amazon order for arsenic, and it was for like 10 grams of arsenic, and it was from an account that had Jim and Waffles at Gmail, which is James Craig's personal email address. It had a credit card associated with James Craig. It had an address associated with James Craig, and it appears that he just ordered this stuff on Amazon, and crazily, they sent it to him.
Wow. I wonder if that's a Prime Day deal. Like, gotta get the arsenic. It's a Prime Day special, half off. Get that new Hoover as well. You know, it'll clean up the mess a little bit. Poison doesn't scream. It doesn't leave a mess. It lingers in the bloodstream and the symptoms and the ambiguity. And that ambiguity is exactly what makes this method so dangerous, not just for the victim, but for the defense. Because if James Craig did poison Angela, he didn't do it in the heat of passion. He did it in a lab coat, with calculation, with intent that didn't flare up, but simmered under the surface of an otherwise normal domestic life. That's the picture prosecutors are painting. And if jurors buy into that timeline, into that chemistry, it may be game over. But here's a twist. Poisoning cases are built on circumstantial webs. Yes, there's toxology. Yes, there's a digital trail. But there's no video of Craig putting anything into Angela's drink. No eyewitness who saw him mix cyanide with her morning smoothie. The defense will zero in on that because in the absence of the gotcha moment, they've got something to work with. Not a lot, but maybe just enough to make one juror pause. Still, this method of murder doesn't work in a vacuum. Craig didn't just allegedly poison Angela. He allegedly nursed her through her symptoms, sat beside her as doctors tried to solve a mystery he already may have known the answer to. And if that isn't manipulation, if that isn't control, it's hard to imagine what is. It's certainly not a loving marriage. It's chilling, really, because the poison didn't just affect Angela's body. If the prosecution is right, it was part of a bigger performance, a final act, and a collapsing marriage where Craig wasn't just ending a life. He was controlling the narrative every step of the way. And that control didn't stop at death, not even close, because next, we're going to move into the cover-up. If you thought the method was disturbing, wait till you hear what Craig allegedly tried to do from jail. Deepfakes, bribery. A letter to his daughter asking her to help fake Angela's suicide. Yeah, and it gets even darker than that, too. You want to hear that? Be sure to press subscribe wherever it is you're downloading podcasts. You don't miss it. It's coming up in the feed next. Tomorrow is when it drops. But if you want to hear it right now, become a premium subscriber on Apple Podcasts or on YouTube. You can get access to it immediately. Or it drops tomorrow. Or if it's already there, it's already there. Let me know your thoughts as well on our YouTube channel. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi to join us there. That's all free. We'd love to hear your feedback on this case. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.